Alaikum. Hopefully everybody is well today. So today is one of those sort of more creative days. We want to start by finishing up with some review of the urinary kind of attached to the genital systems, but urinary system. And then we will have to decide what we're going to do as a team here. I have lots of possibilities. So we'll discover together what it's going to look like today. It's kind of like tying things up, getting questions answered, opening up a few new topics that we think we can cover today. And just a reminder, we have two teleclasses in July, so we can maybe pick a few things up there as well. Our stunning language teacher, who's also my postman, we say that because they don't deliver mail in our village, so we have to get our mail delivered somewhere else. And our language teacher's been kind enough to offer his address. So he brought over a bunch of mail today, meaning my herbs, some of my herbs actually showed up. Alhamdulillah. So I have astragalus, if we want to talk about that, and rose petals galore, and rhodiola, and a few other good things. So, alhamdulillah. So let's talk about the urinary and genital system as they're tied together here. And again, this is from the Healing Book for Every Disease Through Natural Herbs. And these are preparations that are useful for the urinary and genital systems. Top of the heap here is black seed oil. So black seed oil contains many natural substances such as nigellan, fatty acids, glucosidol, phenol, phenol, and carotene. I'm getting a signal, iron and digestive enzymes, so let me see what might be going on here. Signaling that my internet is weak. Are you able to hear me okay? Hello? Sound okay?
It's a little garbly, but we can hear you. Sometimes it gets garbly.
Okay, yeah, that's the signal going in and out. And that's my best services. I have full bars, but who knows what that means anymore. Let's see what we got over here. Doesn't say anything.
Sorry, I mean, okay, so
that's okay. So I'll just continue, and hopefully this will clear itself up and not be a distraction.
Amina, I can hear you very clearly, so I wonder if we also have our own internet things too. So.
Okay, great, thanks. So the benefits of black seed oil has been well known since ancient times, which we've heard about a few times now. It has been used to treat many diseases and to improve bodily functions. Modern studies show that black seed oil can effectively relieve muscle spasms, as well as cure cough, asthma, and gastroenteritis. It is also useful as a general medication for curing headaches and psychological disorders. Additionally, it is known to increase bile and the elimination of urine, eliminate microbes, and strengthen the immune system. Many benefits of black seed are still being discovered. There's a lot of research, especially in the Middle East, about this. The Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam advised us to use black seed as if it were a solution for every illness except death. One can find black seed in pill form in pharmacies, which should be taken 1 to 3 times a day. Otherwise, one may drink black seed oil or may boil the seeds and drink their syrup with honey as one would tea, or one may grind them and mix them with oil. The thing about black seed oil straight, depending on your constitution and general gastrointestinal health, is whether you're going to have trouble with it or not. It's basically it's a hot and dry oil, is its temperament. And with that, we have to be, aware that it may be an aggravation for some. So sometimes people do fine with the ground seeds, but have difficulty with the oil. And again, oil is also, if your gallbladder is compromised or liver is compromised, oil in itself is going to be a little bit more challenging to digest as a general rule. So taking your bitters and your even things like vinegar, apple cider vinegar, are going to help with that digestion of your oils. So where CD mentions here that one can drink the black seed oil or boil the seeds and drink the syrup with honey. So you take the tea and you add honey to make your syrup. Basically, it's a sweetened tea. So you need to pay attention for your own body, what is best for you and the best form to use it. But we do know black seed is, it's like there's a blessing on the black seed that is beyond its physical traits. And this is the part that science doesn't necessarily track in its exploration of its qualities and its healing abilities. Sidi mentions also that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the only one who heals patients. This is what we must always remember, and remember who's behind the disease and who's behind the illness. So hopefully that's relevant to everybody's heart. Here are some treatments. We haven't gotten into the diseases, but they're basically listed as we go through the treatments. These are from CD's book, and that's in the section called Treatment of Urinary Tract Diseases with Herbs. So urinary tract infection, which is so a handful of pumpkin seeds, you want to peel them and boil them in a liter of water. You have this handout, so I'm not sure how much of this detail I should be bothering you with, but pumpkin seeds we know are also really excellent for the prostate. Men should be eating pumpkin seeds by the handful, just as a general course of part of their daily nutritional well-being, you know, through diet. It's an easy thing. I find them tasty, not everybody does, but you can get pepitas, pumpkin seeds, fairly easily in most places, I believe. Other remedies would be to boil strawberry leaves and drink that morning and evening. Tablespoon of grape leaves in a cup of water. That can be made as a tea to drink twice a day. Treatment for kidney stones. Now, I actually made this for the local imam 2 days before he was headed off for kidney stone surgery. So it was really no way to find out whether it was going to be helpful for him or not. And it tastes pretty strong. So I don't know if he ate it or not. I think he found it distasteful, and he didn't strike me as somebody who was going to be bothered with distasteful remedies. But I also gave him some essential oils and things to treat the acute pain that was happening. So he probably used that, but didn't bother with this formula, but you're going to grind a cup of black seed and bake it in a cup of honey. So I combined everything. I ground the seeds. I put the honey in, and I actually baked it in the oven. And then I added some cloves of garlic, mixed all that in, and asked him to consume it before breakfast and three times a day until fully recovered. So best results are to eat whole seeded lemon upon recovery. Eating a whole seeded lemon would, in my mind, based on how I would interpret and other remedies CDs given, is basically to take a lemon and actually juice the entire fruit whole. He's not saying the peel, but he's saying a whole seeded lemon, meaning the whole package. It's an antiviral remedy that he has recommended as part of one anyway. And then you eat the paste. Another remedy is to grind up a cup of lemon juice and olive oil, fresh parsley leaves, and minced garlic. That sounds actually pretty doable. And one spoon nightly before going to sleep, with a large quantity of water. Water's a big one when you're working with the stones like this. Another thing that you can find is an herb called gravel root. You can also use radish seeds. They have, and eating radishes, there's different foods that are going to actually help break up stones. And these are very painful to pass. And it's both men and women get it. It's a buildup of calcium and that sort of thing in that forms little stones and actually little rocks, similar to what you find in your gallbladder. Most people have some stones in their gallbladder. So having a regular diet of things that are going to be less caustic to the kidneys, which are really part of your urinary system, and the bladder itself. Watch your caffeine intake, watch your salt intake, just basic, a lot more vegetables and fresh fruits. Things that are easy to digest and not cause extra work. And if you know you have a tendency towards stones, there's probably some nutritional advice. Another thing food-wise for kidney stones and bladder issues is watermelon. The entire watermelon, not the seeds so much, but the rind, the watermelon rind, the white part of the rind and the fruit, eating copious quantities will help flush out the kidneys and therefore aid and assist the bladder as well. So those are some nutritional things that you might try. Dysuria, which is difficult urination. We can cut an onion into slices, heat it on low, place them on the left and right sides of both kidneys and on the bladder, navel, and between, place them on the left and right sides of both kidneys. One's a little higher than the other. One's lower rather because of the placement of the liver. So on the right side, it's different than the left, but they're close. You can get an anatomy chart to see exactly where they are. So left and right sides of both kidneys, on the bladder, navel, and between the two. So you're basically wrapping yourself with onion, warm onion. Drink a mixture of onion juice, lemon juice, and honey in equal portions once or twice, probably within a day or two. difficult urination is what this is for. You, enuresis, which is involuntary urination. So you're going to collect the leaves of Plantago major and Plantago lanceolata. Plantain. Plantain is a very common weed. The difference between major and lanceolata is the lanceolata, lance, refers to a long, thin blade-like leaf, where the Plantago major is a rounder, fatter leaf. They're both amazing medicine, and in this case, you're going to collect the leaves of either both or one or the other, whatever you can find growing in your flower bed. Take a tablespoon of these leaves, fresh or dried, and put them in a cup of water. Bring the water to a boil, remove from the heat, and let it sit for 10 minutes. I'd cover it. So you're steeping it. Strain the mixture, add honey, and drink 2 spoonsful in the morning and evening until recovered. So the opposite of that, we talked about some of these things in the reproductive system, having to do with prostate, but also having frequent urination, that men of over 50 in general are those most susceptible. And several times cough grass was mentioned. So I pulled this out of the garden today, which is called weeding. But I took the roots as well, because that's the medicine I want. So does this look familiar? We call it crabgrass in the States. Okay. It's also called quake grass. It's got several other names. I sent you the name of it in the initial email, including the Latin if you want to look it up. But what we're looking for are the roots. We want to use the roots for the remedy. And so this is called cough grass. And this helps, with urinary issues. It helps with the benign prostate inflammation. It is, it's good for excessively frequent urination. Where you're getting up multiple times at night to urinate. So that's would be made into a tea and drinking before bed, probably. Of course, the problem with drinking before bed is then you're going to have to get up to go to the bathroom because you've got moisture. You've put a cup of tea in your bladder. So I would drink it either in the mornings, so you start getting the medicine early in the day, and otherwise maybe with your meal. Prostatitis, eat a medium-sized onion with or without olive oil before breakfast, and if possible, with each meal. Onions are very good for the prostate. And this is from Heal Yourself, There is Medicine for Every Illness, page 24. Treating urinary tract disease. The main cause of urinary tract disease is a stone. I'm not sure that's true with cystitis, but which to me is urinary tract disease, but here we go. The stone consists of phosphoric and boric acid. The following herbal mixture is used to treat these stones. It is also used to treat diseases of the reproductive system. The herbal mixture is not only a healing prescription, but also a preventative treatment for those who are prone to stone formation. It should be continued once every 3 days after getting rid of the stone to prevent reformation. So it's true is that there's a tendency for people to have a predisposition to forming stones in the body. So this is your best, our best known right now. This is a good preventative. That along with those pumpkin seeds. So here are the gradients of the herbal formula. And everything is 50 grams except for the licorice root, which is 20 grams. And remember, high blood pressure, this needs to be with caution. So the ingredients of the formula are celery seed, ami, also known as kela, or bishop's weed. Bishop's weed, you might find it in the States more easily. It's the seeds. It's definitely strong medicine, but it's very good. Parsley. You probably, if you're making a tea, you might want to use dry parsley flakes. Ground black seed and licorice root. Now, for those with high blood pressure, you could leave the licorice out of the formula and drink the tea. But when you drink the tea, to take a capsule of the deglycerated licorice so that the blood pressure is not affected. Mix all the herbs and add 1 spoon of boiling water. 1 spoon of boiling water. One spoon to boiling water is, I think, what it's meant to say. So you're going to take a spoonful and add it to your boiling water. Take it twice a day, first thing in the morning and before you sleep, for 10 days. After getting rid of the stone, continue taking it once every 3 days to prevent stone formation. So when you make a tea like this, so you're adding it to boiling water, but then you turn it off, because these are all powdered seeds. Well, they don't have to be, do they? If you wanted, you could take the whole seeds of celery, ami, and black seed and do the decoction first, and then the parsley, add it like a tea. And if you're using the licorice root, then you would, everything but the parsley would be added in advance. Let it simmer on the stove for like 10 minutes. Turn off the heat, add in your parsley, cover it, and let it steep, okay? That's what I have from CD. If somebody has chronic bladder infection, cystitis, we can maybe consider a few other things. Hello.
I was just curious, are any of these remedies, it's Habiba, are any of these remedies good for urinary incontinence? I had Johnny Ahmed at 43, and it's not as bad as it was, but it's still... I still occasionally will get the incontinence, and just wondering if there's anything besides, you know, the Kegel exercises, which aren't really working.
They don't really work, do they? I know there's some homeopathics for it, but this one saying involuntary urination. So this is the plantain leaves recommendation. It's on the second page of this one handout, which is the, you will have received this on the first time I sent out handouts. It's basically a healing book of every disease preparations. So it's on page 2, just before prostatitis, and it's involuntary urination. So you might want to try following that for a bit. It's the using the plantain leaves, which you should be able to find fairly easily. You can probably get it from, you're on the East Coast?
Yes.
I think Penn Herbs, if they're still around, they're a really old herbal supply house in Philadelphia. Penn Herbs. Might be a good resource. You might go online and look for, you know, organic dried plantain leaves. Otherwise, do a Google search for plantain so you can get images of what it looks like for identification purposes, so you're not putting something else in your tea. But you should be able to gather plantain in your area. As long as, again, it's not a place with a lot of dogs or herbicides or those kind of things. It's just knowing your sources. Knowing your source is key so that your herbs are clean. So that's the one thing he has here. Minimizing caffeine helps. I think it's a tricky thing because we've had a structural change, and as challenging as the Kegels practice is, making sure you're doing them correctly, for one thing, it can't hurt. Anytime we're strengthening any kind of muscle structure, it's going to benefit. I'm not sure otherwise what offhand to recommend. Let me see one thing here. I've got my multiple resources available right now. And let's start with herbal, but I was going to check essential oils. Essential oils are an amazing because they are concentrates of herbs, and you have to use them wisely. One of my favorites, cypress. Cypress is amazing. Now, what's interesting is cypress also is used for as a diuretic, in that it releases water. Held, you know, when we have water retention, it's really good for releasing water. So the fact that it's also good for bedwetting and incontinence is interesting. So that's the main essential oil that I'm finding for that. For infections, you might try cedarwood, sandalwood, or lemongrass, or even thieves. Does everybody know about thieves? Thieves is five essential oil blend. It's called Thieves because it was originally supposed to have been used during the Black Plague in Europe by thieves that would go into the homes of the dead and dying and steal their stuff. But they didn't want to catch the disease themselves. So they would wear handkerchiefs, aka face masks, and put these oils in their handkerchief to protect them from getting the plague. And I'm sure they washed their hands in it as well. So, you know, we started making our clove oil the other day. Clove oil is one of the main oils in the formula. That's a very powerful antimicrobial use that we can use for sanitizing. Now that would be for infections. If the bladder is hanging down, which can be part of, it's called prolapse, I guess you would call that. That's where they've done these terrible surgeries on women, causing major problems, where they put in a mesh, a screen mesh, to hold the prop up the bladder, and it's not a good thing. So there are a few essential oils that you can use. Some of them are combinations, and if somebody actually has that issue, I can get you the formula. But putting one drop, three drops of Ravensara, which is an essential oil, and one drop of lavender on your calves, on the calves of your legs. the bladder should pull up if there's prolapse. And I'm sure there are some exercises also recommended out there. I don't know if that's quite enough for you. You can try some of these things. Let me know how it's going and we can explore further, okay? So this is an opportunity for some questions, either about what we were just looking at, anything else we worked on in the last couple of days, or where you would like to go forward. I thought we could do some questions and answers, and then there's some other options. I could talk a little bit more about TIB. I could talk about how to identify actions of herbs by their taste, but then you have to be able to determine what the taste is. Meaning, is it pungent? Is it sweet? Is it salty? That kind of thing. I'd be happy to go over some case studies from other herbalists. We can look at some recommendations, herbal recommendations for COVID, essential oil uses for things like COVID. We can look at making some more potions. I did get my rose petals today. Even though I've been collecting rose petals, we have lots of rose bushes here, and they are organic, so I'm happy to use them. But we had a spell of powdering mildew, and I used a natural spray on them, which seems to have healed everything, but a lot of the flowers had already gotten the mildew on it, and I just didn't want to use that in medicinal formulas. So I went ahead and ordered some flowers. I got these two big bags. They're gorgeous. So we could make something like rose oil. So I'd like to open it up to what you want to get today, as much as possible. We could look at essential oils for some of the nervous system disorders that we talked about, like insomnia, depression, hypertension, things like that, or hyperactivity. So any particular thoughts? Are there burning questions?
Amina, it's Radia. Do you know anything? Hi. Do you know anything for mending bones?
Well, there's a couple of traditional things used for that. Comfrey has been used for bones, and making it as a poultice. There was a time when I think it was the FDA put out some kind of warning about using comfrey, but you know, I don't trust them as far as I could pick any one of them up and throw them. So, because they have agendas associated with, well, I'm just going to say I don't trust them. That's just my personal stand. But let me see what... the other thing is bone set. Although that was used traditionally by natives, it's not necessarily one of its genuine qualities. But this is something called horsetail. Most of you have it. This is an ancient plant that was around during the dinosaurs times. It is, so I can give you some urinary tonics also, some additional tonic teas that are outside of CD's books, if you want, if you like that, I can double check on some things that were already asked. I don't see, where's my bone set? Does she have bone set? Let me find.
Is the horse tail also a poultice?
No, you would want to get it ground up and take it by the spoonful.
Okay.
Yeah, you can make a tea out of it, but it's not the same as ground herb. Its structure, it's like a silicate structure that has, I can give you a good resource for quality horsetail. It's an herbalist down in New Mexico, and his company is Chanchka Remedios. But the structure, it's a silica structure that is similar to how fetal bone structure develops. And we use it in tooth formulas, and it's helpful for bone rebuilding support. So that's horsetail. I have a very limited little herb notes here that don't have everything. Horsetail. So creaky bones and achy joints, high calcium tea is going to have your horsetail in it, and nettles and oats. For creaky bones and achy joints, high calcium tea. It's a different high calcium tea, I think, than I gave you in the handout. The powdered herb would be what I would use. And I'll have to get the name for you and how to the website. So I don't mind people reminding me to do things, because I know I either simply forget, get over full, don't get things quite done when I think I'm going to. And if you're in need immediately, just email me to remind me. I don't want to type it in right now because I'm not sure I'll get it spelled correctly.
That's okay. I'll email you. Thank you.
Okay. And I do have some of the resources, a list of resources that I started to give you yesterday for Frontier Herbs. It's called frontiercoop.com and not Frontier Herbs. Although if you just Googled Frontier Herbs, I'm sure you would get that. Pacific Botanicals. ZackWoodsHerb.com, and that's Z-A-C-K, no spaces, WoodsHerbs.com. And the others were, the Mountain Rose Herbs was fine. It's just mountainroseherbs.com. They're really good. I could work with some of the questions that came up yesterday. The botanical, the varicose vein question. We did get some nice responses from CD's books. Thank you, Nora. The ones that are in there that are, to me, seem the most viable is the onion packs on the legs. The onions have, a sulfuric sort of, they have sulfur in them, and there's something about the sulfur being helpful in this situation. There are other home remedies that you can try. Apple cider vinegar is a good one. One would be to just you know, drink some in some water every day. The other is to directly apply vinegar to your skin, gently massage it in, and do this every morning and before bed. Olive oil is a very simple, safe remedy for treating the varicose veins. There's many medical experts that have proven that massaging your affected skin with the olive oil is a good method to boost blood circulation and reduce the pain and swelling caused by the varicose veins. Of course, any kind of massage is going to then stimulate blood circulation. So basically just 2 tablespoons of olive oil and apply it a couple times a day. Garlic is good. And it would be more about taking it as it's an anti-inflammatory. It helps to remove toxins from the blood vessels and stimulates blood circulation. I would think and maybe increase levels of CoQ10, which are really helpful for your for the structure of your vessels.
Amina, can I add something?
Yes, please.
It's Radia again. Hi. Just for the people that have the varicose veins, when they massage, it has to be really, really light. Just in case they think deeper or firmer is better, you have to go super light on varicose veins. Really super
subtle. Excellent, excellent. Thank you, yes. And always towards the heart. So you're going to be moving up the leg, not down. And yeah, thank you for that. Very gentle. You can consume garlic, but also you can, you know, you can massage the veins with a combination of garlic, oranges, and olive oil. Interesting combination. You have to let that, you put 6 garlic cloves, 3 on oranges, and 2 tablespoons of olive oil, and it's squeezed orange juice. And so you add the orange, olive, and garlic all into a jar, and you mix them well and leave it for 12 hours. And then you can start using that mixture on a cotton cloth, and then, you know, apply it daily. And when you do a poultice like that, you're not putting pressure on the skin or veins. Another thing would be cayenne pepper because of its help with circulation. And the recommendation is to actually drink cayenne pepper as a tea. I know it sounds pretty outrageous, but it's actually not as bad as it sounds. It's full of bioflavonoids and vitamin C, so they can help the blood and reduce swelling and pain. Cabbage leaves. Here we go again. It's a high nutritional item that helps many diseases, but it includes varicose veins. So it possesses a lot of minerals and vitamins that promote blood circulation. And it is also, it's also a sulfur, sort of sulfur containing, you just simply apply cabbage leaves to the varicose veins or eat them daily to improve your condition. I do both, and gosh, you just might wrap yourself in cabbage and take a cool bath with cabbage leaves. Chrysanthemum. Chrysanthemum flowers, again, they've been used in Chinese medicine for a long time. You can get them usually by the box in Chinese markets and or Chinese herbal shops that are ready for use as tea, and also, you know, both for drinking and making a tea that you soak a cloth in and apply. I don't see any reason why, if you're just using it externally, not to use chrysanthemums. And it's usually the smaller little chrysanthemums, not those great big ones, that you can use for just externally. So you make the tea and you soak cloth, and then you apply the solution to your veins for 5 minutes. and do this regularly. So this is another option. So fresh chrysanthemum tea is a great way to also, by drinking the tea, is helpful for this. Which hazel is known for helping with this? It's got to do with the gallic acid and essential oils that may assist in relieving pain and swelling. So you can get witch hazel distilled from the pharmacy, but if you can get actual witch hazel bark to make your tea with, then you can take the witch hazel, warm water, make an extraction. You dip your cotton cloth in the witch hazel and apply it directly 2 to 3 times a day. I can also run a tub of warm water, not too hot, and it would be more like a sitz bath. So it's just enough water to, like when you sit down in the tub, you're covering your legs. And you're just gonna put a couple of drops of prepared witch hazel in the tub and soak for about 15 minutes and then rinse it off and do this daily. It's also a nice way to relax. Now here's a good one. Cypress essential oil. Great stuff for lots of things we've already talked about. I think because I had such a giant, oh God, I've hardly got any left. I had such a giant bottle of it at home. I put some in a bottle to bring with. I gave the customs people a really good time with all the things that I brought, and that wasn't even herbs. So it's quite amazing, cypress essential oil. You can get it, good quality cypress oil from both Mountain Rose Herbs. You can get it from Bulk Apothecary. They have a really good price on it. So you would add 4 to 5 drops of cypress oil to 2 tablespoons of olive oil. You're going to make the mixture, and then you're going to warm it slightly. So 2 tablespoons of olive oil is not very much. And one of my little tricks for warming oil without overheating it is to actually heat my spoon. Use a metal tablespoon, like soup spoon, just warm it over the burner. Don't let it get too hot. It gets hot very, very, very quickly. Put your olive oil in, dump it. That's gonna warm the oil, just doing that. And then put your drops of essential oil, kind of mix it together, and you apply this solution while it's warm and leave it on for a while, and then you're gonna wash it off with just lukewarm water. And you can repeat this 2 times a day. I don't know why you would need to wash it off unless you don't like the smell of the cypress oil. It's very aromatic. And olive oil and vitamin E is very effective in providing the moisture necessary nutrition for the skin. And the olive oil is a great way to treat your varicose veins, which we've already mentioned. And because of the antibacterial and anti-inflammatory actions, it can also increase blood circulation and reduce pain effectively. So just 1 tablespoon vitamin E and 1 tablespoon olive oil. To get large, like a bottle of vitamin E oil, I find that they mix a lot of vitamin E oil with soybean oil, but a lot of times they also extract vitamin E from soybeans, so they're compatible. So it's just sort of up to you what you can find and where you can find a quality vitamin E. Taking your vitamin E capsules and breaking them open, that's a lot of capsules to get a tablespoon of vitamin E oil. So you're gonna combine those, warm the solution. I do it the same technique. and apply it to the skin for some minutes, and then just follow the process a couple times a day. And number 10 is jojoba oil, grape seed oil, and lemon. So you're going to put 3 to 4 tablespoons of jojoba oil and 3 to 4 tablespoons of grape seed oil and 8 to 10 drops of lemon. It's just lemon juice, and which is enriched vitamin C and works as a blood purifier. And so you're going to mix them together well and apply them to your legs or where the area is affected, and gently massage and repeat, massage and repeat the remedy twice a day. Some of the other things you can do for that is some people are suggested to use the compression socks. It depends. I would talk to a medical practitioner about. And then Radia, if you have any insights as well. Some light exercise is probably also very good, not excessive. If you take a bath in lukewarm water and then rinse your legs in cold water, it's going to help increase blood flow. Eating foods high in fiber and vitamins, vegetables and fruits, and eating some spices like ginger, garlic, that can help break down the fiber, causing vein thrombosis. So hopefully this, in addition to what Nora sent, is helpful. I have one more thing. I've got a recipe for you to make a liniment. Everybody knows yarrow. So the yarrow flowers and leaves. The leaves are little filmy, little lovely little leaves. So you can take yarrow flower and leaf one part. I don't have any to show you of raspberry leaf. If you have raspberry bushes, collect your leaves, wash them, let them dry, and once they're completely dry, store them. A half a part of raspberry leaf, 1/8 part of cayenne pepper flakes, and apple cider vinegar, unpasteurized. So unpasteurized usually still has the mother in it. My mother is on the bottom. And you're basically gonna put the herbs in a wide mouth jar, add enough vinegar to cover them by 2 inches, cover the jar and let it sit in a warm spot for 2 to 3 weeks, strain and bottle. Now, when you put it in a jar, because it's vinegar, if you don't have non-acid reactive lids on your mason jars, you're going to want to put at least either wax paper or parchment paper before you put your lid on, because you're going to get a metal reaction to the vinegar, and you don't want that going into your remedy. And basically you're going to shake it, and you're going to do the same thing we're doing with our oils. And the sunny window is really indirect sun, but it's going to add some warmth. And the warmth is going to help with the extraction. It's like putting it on our double boiler and slowly simmering it into, coaxing it into releasing its medicine. So this is a full complement of astringent, firming, and toning herbs. Is simple liniment, very helpful for treating varicose veins and bruises. And so gently massage the legs up towards the heart using the liniment and rubbing it in well. So it's really just a matter of lightly rubbing your hand over the skin until it's taken into the skin. So you can use it long, steady, upward strokes only. long rather than scrubbing. So the veins are quite extended. If the veins are quite extended, soak a cloth in the liniment and apply as a compress directly over the veins rather than doing any kind of rubbing. This liniment is helpful for healing bruises as well, but for obvious reasons is not recommended for hemorrhoids. I think the vinegar might burn.
Thank you, Amina. Can I ask a question?
Yes.
So I have a personal question, and I also would really love to make the rose oil. So I'm just going to put a vote for that. I feel like I need, I don't know where to start. Like, I'm just wanting to, I feel like I need some support for kind of detoxifying, maybe liver support for letting go and passing things. And I started eating too much cake. So I've been, during quarantine, so I've been getting strict about eating vegetables and more protein, but it's making me feel constipated. I feel my body does this around menstruation also, just really retaining fluids and holding on to whatever I've got.
Okay.
Like, that might be good for a famine, but it doesn't feel good in my body. And I wanted to tell you that apple cider vinegar and licorice are the two things that just keep attracting me a lot. And you know that I'm hot and dry.
Okay. So I completely, number one, relate to putting on the excess while in lockdown, not being able to, as a senior, I wasn't allowed to go out. We've now just been given freedom from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. to leave our premises. But we weren't supposed to go anywhere. We had friends delivering groceries. Nice to have good people, hospitable, generous souls in your community. But I noticed I put on a lot of weight myself. So liver congestion is something that, so let's consider it a winter condition. In winter, we're usually, let's just assume it's a cold environment. We spend more time indoors. We eat heavier foods to warm our bodies. And so Allah provides us with spring foods to clean the liver specifically. Burdock and dandelion happen to be spring liver cleaning tonic foods. The dandelion leaf is a good diuretic to help with, again, water retention that might come with your period. But the root of the dandelion and the root of the burdock are excellent liver tonics. I'm going to recommend, see, I'm considering what the homework is this time. Instead of asking you to go over a whole bunch of questions, I'm going to hope that you'll actually read over all the handouts. That's usually one request. And instead of doing an exam, asking you questions that are all contained in the handouts, what I'm going to ask you to do is make between 1 and 3 remedies at home and report on them. So I'm going to show you some. I'm also going to put a couple of recipes on in Google Classroom. And, you know, I know time constraints, accessibility to things. Not everybody's out of lockdown. Some places are more out of lockdown than others. So it's really about doing as much as possible, as easily as possible. But I'm going to ask you to come up with between 1 and 3 remedies One remedy will get you a passing grade. So the extra two are really just because you're loving the herbs and you want it for yourself and friends and family. But I am going to encourage you all, especially if you have liver cleaning that you'd like to work with, or liver toning and strengthening, to make that liver support tincture either with vegetable glycerin or with apple cider vinegar. Now you can get there's a lot of resources out there just in your supermarket for organic, unfiltered, mother-containing apple cider vinegar. Bragg's has been around for decades and they're still out there and it's still an excellent product. There's others who are coming up with the same product. It's just, it's really good. The Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam would use vinegar. There's a whole reference to his use of vinegar as not being able to live without vinegar. There were times when he only ate bread and vinegar, maybe because that's all he had, but for whatever his reasoning, the vinegar had value. And Seedy talks about apple cider vinegar quite a bit in his books. So using either vinegar, now you have to test for yourself. Some of you may know Shakti Miller. She lives in the Austin, Texas community. She's a naturopathic doctor. She shared with me, I found this for myself, but she shared something that made sense that helped me to identify some things. It's like, if you take apple cider vinegar, which is prescribed for weight loss, somebody wanted weight loss support, CD has you take that, I think it's before you eat. I take it after I eat if I've had a heavy meal and I need to give my digestive system a boost. One of our housemates that was living here for a while, everybody get up for Fajr, and he'd have a couple glasses ready for us to drink of vinegar, warm water, and honey. So we'd start our day with vinegar water. It is blood cleaning, it's alkalizing. So, you know, vinegar is really good, but not everybody is great with vinegar. If you're already super high acid in your stomach, vinegar may cause you more heartburn or burning. And so vinegar may not be your best remedy. You will do better with the vegetable glycerin. If you are low acid, which many of us are, and as we've gotten older, we become more low acid, which is meaning our stomach is cooling down and we need to encourage heat, would be to use apple cider vinegar. And it usually makes ease in the stomach and helps with digestion. I find it helpful if I've had meat and something a little greasy, which can happen when you're treated to a meal out here where the main thing that people love to eat at the restaurants is meat, which we don't eat much of at home. We're not big meat eaters. So it's usually a shock to the system as well. So I would try using that liver tincture that's in the handouts for immune system. Okay. You can get the glycerin on Amazon. You can get kosher glycerin, and you can usually find organic kosher vegetable glycerin. Okay, a note about drying herbs and twigs.
Sorry, before you move on, in that handout it says that it takes about 4 to 6 weeks to make that.
Minimum 2 weeks. Minimum 2 weeks. Any of these extracts that we make in like an oil, vinegar, vegetable glycerin, it's going to take 2 weeks in the jar in your warm, sunny, but indirect light window. You don't want direct sunlight because it actually breaks down the herbs. But a warm window where you have indirect sun that warms up the window space is a nice way of sort of warming up the oil to speed up the extraction. The longer you leave it, the stronger your remedy is going to be because it's had more time to extract, but the minimum is 2 weeks.
Okay. And indirect sun at the window, is that a north facing, at least?
It could be east, west. If it's a southern facing window, but you have like a kind of like if there's an awning or something that's breaking the direct sunlight coming in, that's also okay. North facing may not be warm enough.
Right, yeah. Okay, especially in the UK.
Yeah, and you, right. Well, we are hitting some summer. You might get a little bit of warmth soon.
You should see outside right now.
Oh, God, do you have snow? Please.
No, it's just very gray and windy.
Yeah, right. When we first did rose oils with my first Avicenna Academy class, which is based in the UK, we had to submit all our herbs that we, our remedies that we had made. And the teacher was like, wow, your stuff is so good. What'd you do to make the rose oil? I'm like, well, I followed your instructions, number one. And what I didn't get to tell him was I had it in the jar for like 2-3 months, not 2 weeks. Mm. And it came out really strong and rich and fragrant and fabulous. Mm. And when I was originally taught this, I was taught to not put it in the sun. I was just told to keep it in a closet cupboard and shake it daily. So it is recommended, but not in direct sunlight. So again, it's just, maybe you have a radiator under the windowsill that kind of puts a little heat up.
How about if it's covered in a tea towel, but it's in.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay.
Yeah. Cover it so you're not getting direct sunlight affecting the herbs directly, because it does, the sun does break them down.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. One more thing. Do you mind? Just when it says one part and one part this, one part that, is that just you do it by weight or?
Well, no, when you're doing it by part, you're not necessarily doing it by weight. If you decide to use it by weight, do it by weight, then you're still establishing the weight of one part. So if you're saying one part is 5 grams, then two parts is 10 grams.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the handout on dosing, it should tell you how, what, this is under Simpler's method, which is talks about what a part would be.
Okay.
A part could be a tablespoon, it could be a cup, it could be ounces, it could be whatever.
I see, okay. But
once you establish what your part is, that's your measurement throughout the formulation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great, thanks. Rahma, Sue, you have a question about drying herbs and twigs. Thank you for asking it. Oh, you're muted. Can't hear you. You have to unmute.
Sorry, I thought I did. Where we moved to about, I don't know, 7 years ago, maybe 8 almost, I had visions of becoming an herbalist, and we have black birch on our hill and spice bush and but it turns out, kind of like your rose petals, I may as well be living in a rainforest. And the twigs, though I hung them outside under my woodshed, all got mildewy before they got dry. And what I did was to purchase an electric dehydrator, just kind of to try to get them to be dry before they molded. And I wonder, right. Does that mean I can't be an herbalist when I grow up, or can I use a dehydrator?
if you have temperature regulation on your dehydrator, it's probably okay as long as you can get it super, super low setting. Okay, so there's a couple ways of doing this. If you're living in a rainforest, it's going to be slightly different, except for sunny days and things that you're going to gather in the summer, like St. John's wort or something like that, nettles in the spring, your dandelion, your roots and your leaves, okay? So like my grass roots here, my crabgrass roots, they were covered in mud, obviously, because I just dug them out of the dirt. So first I had to get the dirt off. When we would go out and harvest any kind of thing, so your roots, obviously, you're going to scrub them really well, depending on the plant. Some plants need to be, sometimes you want the outer bark, and sometimes you want the inner bark. It just depends on what the plant is that you're harvesting. If you have Oplopanax hordenum up there, which is devil's club, you would take, it's basically the outer to inner bark, but not the whole root. Things like Oregon grape, you're going to take the outer bark off and you're going to scrape the inner yellow bark. It's very much a replacement for golden seal. Golden seal has become very endangered because of over-harvesting. If you seriously want to participate in the herbal world in your own environment, I would join Plant Savers, for one. Plant Savers is going to help you know what plants are endangered, and it's better to either grow them yourself or get things from a source that is, growing them organically and naturally, because certain things are simply endangered from over-harvesting. The Cascara Sagrada, which is the bark of the Cascara Sagrada tree, became very popular a couple decades ago, and people just went out and started stripping the bark off the trees. When you strip a tree all the way around, the tree's going to die. You can strip sections, leaving enough bark on the rest of it. It's like somebody coming and peeling all your skin off. You know, you can scrape your skin off in a place on your body, but if somebody were to completely strip your skin, you would not do well. And the same with the trees. So it's having a knowledge about good wildcraft harvesting techniques. So send me an email. Thank you, Rahima. Send me an email that reminds me that you need some resources for wildcrafting your medicinal herbs. So it'll give you some ideas on how to harvest certain things. When you're drying things, so depending on what it is, if it's leaves and flowers, you're going to rinse them off, you're going to shake them off, and if you're lucky and have a sunny day, what I would do is then I would lay out, preferably on a tray, just makes it easier to bring things in and out. But I would put newspaper down, then I lay paper towel on that so that you're not getting the ink from the newsprint on your plants. And that creates a clean space. You're going to lay your things out as unobstructively as possible, meaning don't layer it super thick on each other, and just let it dry. Sometimes I'll put another layer of, say, paper towel over it just to give it, keep other things from falling on it and soiling the clean leaves, and let it dry off enough to remove the water. If, however, like, because where I got involved, really involved with the herbal medicine was in the Pacific Northwest, which is also a rainforest. Prior to that was when I was living in Mexico. Prior to that, I was in Southern California. But in Oregon, we had a lot of wet weather as well. So if you go out and harvest your nettles before the summer, when they start to become, they start to get too much silica in them for healthy use. So harvesting them now would be really good, your nettles. So the same thing, you're going to rinse off the leaves, you're going to lay them out to dry. I would get drying racks. If you have a garage, basement, or a spare room that you can set up some tables, even one table, and create some drying racks, or some racks where you can hang your herbs, okay? So there's the technique of laying it down flat and letting it dry. There's a technique of hanging things. When you hang things that are by the stem, you're going to want to, I'm just trying to see if I have something I could example. You use a rubber band and you're going to hang them upside down. So you've got, like, you've harvested these great flowery things. You're going to tie a rubber band around the stems. The reason for the rubber band is because as they dry, they're going to shrink. If it's just the string, they're going to fall out. So the rubber band will collapse in with the drying of the stems. And then I would just tie a string around the rubber band like a hook and hang it. The other thing is use of a paper bag, where you punch a hole in for your string to go through. So you're hanging them from your rafters in a warm space so it's not cold and prone to mildew. The paper bag, all that is doing, or sometimes I would just make a cone out of newsprint or newspaper and just cover it so that dust, if you're leaving it for any length of time, so dust isn't falling down on the drying material. It's just about keeping things clean. This is all important. Roots, you're gonna, unless it's red root, which you have to work with immediately. Also, lamation dissectum, I believe, is really important to use right away. Slice it up however you're gonna use it, because what can happen. Actually, let me take that back. I think on the lamation, you have to wait till it starts to dry a little bit, and then you cut it. Don't let it get completely dry. The thing is, certain things become super hard and impossible to cut later. So you have to slice them while they're fresh. So this is where we need to, this is a longer conversation that we don't need to include everybody on unless they're interested. So we can have either a private conversation, or I can get you some other resources. The herbs, the roots do need take a lot longer to dry. Depending on the thickness of them, if they're thin roots, you can dry them intact. If they're super heavy, I'd slice them up a bit to help them dry. The thing is that things that are too heavy and super moist, if they're not dried fairly quickly, are going to tend to rot. Okay, so your roots and stems and twigs are going to take longer. They need to have some heat, low temperature heat, to prevent mildew and mold. They need to be air. There needs to be enough air around everything, so that again, if they're all compacted, they're going to end up with moisture issues. So hanging them, lying them flat, making, like, getting a frame and putting screen mesh and laying down your plants is a good way to get airflow. But a cold shed, although covered from the rain, is still going to absorb moisture from the air, and the plants are going to, as you've experienced, go mildewy. So they need to be inside, even if it's a heated garage or a heated basement or a heated shed, where you can keep the moisture out. Hopefully that helps. Inshallah. Okay.
I had a question.
Sure.
Two, actually. The first one is about COVID, and I don't know if you had heard about, you know, the what happens during a cytokine storm is that there's a lot of blood clots that form, mm-hmm. and what's really causing the complications is not necessarily people with pre-existing lung conditions, but more or less people with heart conditions where they can't pump blood as efficiently, and so the clots get caught up in the lungs. Sometimes they're getting caught up in people's limbs and they're losing limbs. And when I had it back in April, unbeknownst to me, saw palmetto is actually also a blood thinner. So I had a really bad sore throat the first 2 days, and then it just I could still feel an obstruction in my throat, but it didn't hurt to swallow anymore. And I was just confused. I had no idea. And then later on, I found out that it was a blood thinner. So one of the things they're trying to do in the hospitals right now is that as soon as somebody gets diagnosed, they try to put them on blood thinners as a preventative measure. So I don't know if there's any herbs that you would recommend for some people. I mean, I was lucky that saw palmetto was okay for me, but I'm sure not everybody could use that. But maybe just natural blood thinning herbs as part of a preventative, something when someone suspects they have COVID, or if they've gotten tested and they know they have COVID, something they can take as a preventative measure to avoid the complications that come with it that lead people to get hospitalized.
I know that a lot of onion is a good blood thinner as well. Some of the things we talked about just now about for the urinary system were good blood circulatory remedies. I don't want to assume to state anything about this is how to treat COVID, because I can't do that. I don't have the background. I don't have the knowledge. I don't have this. I've never treated anybody. I have a few other suggestions that might be symptomatically assisting people, like grapefruit essential oil and helichrysum are good for blood clots.
Second one?
Helichrysum.
Helichrysum, okay. And ingest essential oil, in their food or no?
No, do not ingest essential oils. It's a thing people are doing, but I it's too strong on the kidneys. Applying it topically, first putting a layer of jojoba oil on the skin, and then putting a few drops of essential oil is a good way of safely applying the essential oils. It goes through the skin directly into the bloodstream, so you're going to get the medicine with the essential oils, quickly without going through the digestive system. It goes straight to the bloodstream. Of course, when I get these questions offhand, I can't always remember everything I know. blood thinning. Well, I'm trying to think what my mother was not allowed to eat because I couldn't treat my mother with anything because she was on blood thinners, and these things would encourage blood thinning. So all your green leafy vegetables, basically green tea, all of that is going to support
thinning your blood. Let me look at that over the break, since we are now 3 minutes past our break time. Let's come back in half an hour and I'll try to give you a few more. Was that the only question about it?
What, you know, modern science has allowed us to separate vitamins, but are we better off like eating herbs? Or, I mean, I know food is the best source to get the vitamins that we're deficient in, but I just worry sometimes that I take too many vitamins or, you know, minerals and things like that, supplements, so.
Yeah, okay, well, we can track that in a little bit. See you guys in about 30 minutes.
Thank you.
Do you, it sticks on you when you brush up against it. You end up walking around with its leaves. You can grab a piece, just touch it to yourself and it'll stay on you all day long. So it's both are very good for the bladder, urinary system. Nettles are very excellent as well. There are good concoctions to help with that. Cranberries, of course, very important. We didn't talk about cranberries. Gosh, I didn't talk about a whole lot. But the urinary system, it's important to keep that happy and healthy. I think the stones that were being referred to really are the crystals of the cystitis. I mean, I had an aunt with bladder cancer and she had to have a bag. So it's good to keep that organ healthy, just like every other part of the body, keeping the body strong with fruits and vegetables, especially. One more thing I failed to mention about liver health, artichoke. And the leaves from the artichoke plant, this is something else I gathered here in the yard. We happened to have some lovely artichokes growing. And they're incredibly bitter. And you're going to find bitter, it's almost like the bitter tends to like squeeze the guck out of your organs or something like that. I don't know. It's just my way of thinking about it so I can think of bitters. So leaf... you can order that from Mountain Rose Herbs. Sorry, there's a facility we used to do healing intensive at a long time ago in Calistoga called Mountain Home Ranch. So I'm always Mountain Rose Herbs, not Mountain. So I get twisted in my brain sometimes. Let's see. I had a couple other things. Myself to my computer screen for a sec. Oops, not that one. Hi. So, are we looking at my garbage cans? Great. Very nice. Very nice of you. So some natural blood thinning herbs might be considered with ginkgo biloba. It's a good circulatory booster, which is why it's helpful for memory and brain health. It helps to get blood moving in the brain. Garlic, raw garlic, that's a big one. Turmeric is a blood thinner. Thyme, making tea with thyme helps to thin the blood and is good for the heart. Cayenne pepper capsules for thinning the blood and improving circulation, which we also talked about with the varicose veins in part because of that. Licorice tea, yes, it's good for blood thinning. Ginger is a good blood thinner. I mean, all these things, they have anti-inflammatory, they have other things that are good, and, you know, it's more than, but they can also be helpful. Cinnamon is also good, and additional foods are going to be your fish oil. Walnuts, as far as foods go, grapes, pomegranates. So hopefully that's somewhat helpful. As far as vitamins and things like that, oh, you can't see out that lovely window. Oh, well, just seeing junk on the windowsill. Hello again. Obviously, it's best if you can get your supplement, your nutrients straight from your food. We all know, however, unless you're eating really good organically grown fruits and vegetables, you don't have a real good guarantee of the nutrition that's left in them. How long have they been sitting in the store? Have they been harvested before they were ripe? And have they been sitting in cartons on trucks and sold to you coated with waxes to preserve them? Are they, you know, have their qualities broken down because of that? Are there, are they not organically grown and therefore grown in poor soil conditions without nutrients in it? This is the other thing when you're looking at trying to get your nutrition out of food. Also, just how well your digestive system is absorbing the foods. If you're not absorbing, digesting properly, so the stomach has to be at the right temperature and really breaking down the food, not burning the food with excess heat. So it's having a good, healthy digestion. One way of knowing whether your digestion is optimal or not is to take a look at your feces. Is there whole food particles still in your feces? You know, things that haven't been chewed properly to start with, so whole pieces of corn kernels sometimes you might see. What color is the feces? Is it green, or is it a nice medium brown? Is it floating because it's full of fat? Or is it, you know, drop down where it belongs? And is it a nice even brown color? Looks like everything has been digested. It's just what's left over that you no longer need. These are good ways of determining whether or not your digestion is working well. If your stools are really dark, not black and sticky like there's bleeding internally, but dark because you've overburnt your food, or if it's super pale and or undigested food, it's too cold. Those are some things that you can pay attention to know whether your digestion, whether you're going to even have a chance of getting the nutrients out of your food, if is to have good digestion. So that's the best way to get that. To supplement, which is somewhat necessary in our Western society anyway, is to, and especially if you're out there busy and you've got a lot of stress, you want to supplement with additional supplementation of vitamins and minerals. You know, using your whole salt, like the pink salt, rock salts, they have a lot of minerals that you can get naturally that way. There's homeopathic cell salts that can be helpful. And also just knowing your supplier for your supplements. If you have if you take like a whole meal protein powder rather than a protein powder, but like a whole meal replacement food powder for like your morning shake, if that's how you take your food in the morning. There's a couple really good ones out there, and there's some phony baloney ones. So if you, the more expensive ones, I'm sorry to say, it's not that, I mean, if you compare having a meal replacement and count that it's going to feed you for a whole month, you know, you add it up, it's really not that much, but it's sticker shock initially maybe, but you need to look for whole food replacement, whole meal replacement, and read the ingredients. It should mostly just be food, vegetables and fruits and herbs, and very little chemically created supplements. So what I can say about your minerals and vitamin intake. So anybody object to making a rose oil?
Aminas, could you say more about which vitamins we should supplement with and which minerals, and if you have a suggestion for which protein powder?
You know, I can't really remember the names of the one. It's, I want to say real food, but I don't know that that's really a, I know Whole Foods carries one that's really good. There's a multi-level marketing one that I've used, and I thought it was very good. But it gets expensive because you have to buy it continuously. You know, it's kind of, and they've raised their prices. It's a good product though. I used to sell it and I can't remember it. Well, sell it. I mean, I used it and I was anyway. I can't remember the name. Pure something having to do with
Herbalife.
Herbalife? No, not Herbalife. No. It was a food, not a vitamin supplement. Anyway, I thought it was a good product, but it became over much for me. That's what happens sometimes. You pack certain things in your head and you know all this stuff, and then you add more stuff, and then other things have to like take a back shelf because there's only so much storage space. My hard drive is kind of full. So rebooting every once in a while. Sorry, I can't be more specific. If you look at CD's book, most of his books especially, but that the one you have, Nora, it has a list of, it has pages of vitamin supplements based on what their values are going to be. I'm not really a nutritionist, so that's not my area to really know. I know the things right now that they're finding helpful for COVID is vitamin D, majorly. Vitamin D is as important as your vitamin C. Vitamin C, of course, is very good. We talked about that before. Vitamin D, vitamin E, a lot of your basics, but just a good multivitamin mineral supplement. If you're still bleeding, women, you get one for under 50. If you've stopped bleeding, you get it formulas for over 50, where they've taken the iron out. The iron supplement is for women who are bleeding, and otherwise we don't really need so much iron after that. Sorry, I can't give you name brands and that sort of thing, but if you look at the I just put that. I'm so goofy. Yeah, it's the healing book for every disease through natural herbs. That's the one I know for sure. There's pages in the front full of descriptions of vitamins and minerals. Okay, other questions? Do we want to try to make one of these oils?
I'm very excited for the rose petal. Formula.
Everybody else good with roses? So let me tell you a little bit about what rose oil is used for. The rose petal is a cold and what we call cobbed herb, and it is so cobbed is a similar to, is basically astringent. It's not necessarily dry, but it's astringent, so cold and astringent. The best is when you can harvest your flowers during the full moon and dry them in the moonlight. Every time I try to do that, we either have weather or winds or something, and I end up just putting them in the window and hoping that the moon passes by at some point. And then you take them in during the day, and then you put them back out at night. So that is about using the energetics also of the moon, which is cold also, and the sun being hot, moon being cold. You want to dry your cold herbs in the moonlight. It just, it's part of the unity of things. So rose is good for treating hot ailments. It's good for headaches. I mentioned before that if you make it with ghee instead of oil, it's better for migraines. It's very nice on the skin. It's very healing and soothing for the skin. Very nice, especially depending on the base oil you use. Now, there's different ways of making rose oil, and there's a very traditional way of making rose oil that takes hours and hours of standing over the stove, and you get very little oil out. I'm not going to do that today. We're going to use the really cold method, very simple methods, which is, again, doing the extraction in the oil. Now, ideally, we would be using almond oil, which is a neutral oil. I'm not prepared for that today. The most oil I had, almond oil I have, is like 50 milliliter, not much. My formula, which is an Ibn Sina formula, calls for 136 grams of petals and 408 grams of oil. That was only 50 milliliters. So you can see it's a lot of oil. I'm not even sure if cutting in half, my jar is big enough to hold 204 grams of oil. So I have to see how much that is. And this is going to be by weight, okay? So there is a whole process here. It's not just dumping some rose petals in and pouring some oil over top of them. You could do it that way. We'll use olive oil. Olive oil is warm oil, and so this is not going to be as cold of a formula as I would like. But it's okay. It's not bad. It's not a bad way to go. It's still going to be very soothing to the skin. It will probably have some effect on headaches. The other thing for vaginal tears, for whatever reason, it's very soothing for that tissue. Let me just I'm gonna grab my scale here. I got all these rose petals. 500 grams. Oh my God, it smells so good. I could be healed just smelling roses. Alhamdulillah. Okay, this is 500 grams. I only need 68 if I can do half of what I need. I'm not sure yet. I'm gonna have to measure my oil by weight. So the way I'm going to do that, because I have to also leave room in my jar. So I'm gonna
Amina,
Hi there. Yes? Rahima? Are you echoing again?
Sorry, beloved, I was taking care of my echo. Alhamdulillah. I was wondering, is there a way that we can make oils and use them on our skin and not like stain our clothes? Because like if we want to, I don't know, like use it in the morning and then go out and about, or, you know, or like that helps not have that oily stain, you know, like all day long.
Yeah. Okay. So you need to put it on early enough for it to absorb in your skin. You need to put it on early enough to absorb. Secondly, you would then take a tissue and pat off any excess. Like if you're putting it on your throat and your face, and you're putting like a head covering on, and then you've got a greasy head covering, yucko. So what you do is you want to just get it on early enough and let it soak in a bit and then pat off excess. Otherwise, on other parts of the body, it's basically the same. You're going to pat, you know, you're going to put it on, give it plenty of time to soak in, hopefully, and then just wipe off excess. I know it's one of those tricky things. And when it's really hot out, it's going to possibly melt off your skin if you have a lot on there. So when I step over here, can you hear me still from here?
Yeah, we can hear you well.
Okay, let me get one more thing on. Okay, so whenever you're going to use a scale for measurement by weight, let's see, come over here more. Oops. Just trying to figure out the best position here. How's that? Okay. So you're going to take an empty container, you're going to put it on your scale. And then you're going to get the tar weight. So it's at zero, even though I've got weight on here. So first thing I want to do, I'm going to measure out 68 grams of petals. My bowl's big enough. Now I'm going to have to pick through these flowers. There are some leaves, but nothing like and I may have to go with less just to fit in my jar's not that big, but I'm going to grind these into a powder. I might have to downsize this formula another half. because I'm not sure I'm going to fit all this in the small jar. I don't have the bigger jars. So that's 68 grams, and I'm kind of, there's the top. You can't really see it. You see that it's like over the top here. Granted, there's a few leaves in here I'd like to take out. This is pretty clean. These are pretty clean petals. I've spent hours cleaning my roses from stems and stuff when I've purchased it before. So this is actually pretty good. I got this actually out of the UK from Just Ingredients Essentials. They did a nice job. Before that, I got them at Lhasa Karnak. They had great ones. You want the red roses if you can, but as long as the rose petals are fragrant, that's all you really need to worry about. I might be putting half of this back because this is a lot of roses. This is all the bigger my jar is. Even though once I powder this, it might end up like this. So what I also need to do is see how much my oil is. So I'm going to put another empty container. It's going to zero out. Right now I'm looking at 204 grams. If I cut it in half, it'll be 102 grams. So let's see what we get. Okay, we're gonna do the 204. No problem. Oops. Well, that went a little over. So that compared to that, it's a lot more rose than oil. Interesting. So that's, oh, look, it's 200. That's 208 grams of oil. I'm looking for 204. I'm not going to worry about the extra 4 grams. It's going to be fine. Inshallah. This is just a coffee spice grinder. My first year of doing this, I used my big stone mortar and pestle. Oh, I thought I was gonna lose my arm. So as I'm doing this, I'm just picking out any little green leaves. What's really nice is this doesn't have like the seed, the pestle, it doesn't have much of that sort of thing. But there are a few leaves. We basically just want petals as much as possible. Noise. Ready for the dust to settle? Pretty good. Could maybe make it a little bit finer, but
a wooden herb spoon, knock it down into the oil. I think Mountain Rose Herbs has roses, but you might check to see if they have just as buds. What I've discovered with herb supply houses is it sort of depends. I mean, it's like any kind of a agricultural product. It's going to depend on the season, the weather, whether there's been crop damage because of like rains coming at the wrong time, that sort of thing. You just don't know why they end up not having the same product every time you go back to the shop. Some of them are a lot more consistent than other sources. And I was able to find out from Lhasa Karnak last time, like what the actual source of the roses. Morocco was one. I think Turkey was another. And of course, silly me, I couldn't find, I could find buds, which take forever to pick through. And so I just, with my lazy self, plus I've been collecting roses myself from our garden, like I said, and I just wanted to, I have a lot of formulas I have to do with rose petals. So I just decided to get
Amina?
Yes?
It's Habiba. I was just wondering, what is that nifty little blender thing, grinder thing? What is?
Isn't that cool? It is just a coffee. It's called Fakir House Gerate. It's aromatique. I can get you the brand. It's considered a coffee and spice grinder, but it's really nice because it comes apart. I love it. I saw my herb teacher, my Ibn Sina herb teacher, using something similar, and I was like, "Oh wow!" And I found one in I found one at the shop here, so I was very happy.
Alhamdulillah, would any coffee grinder work, or is that something very special? Oh,
okay. What you want to do is make sure there's no coffee in it. I often use like a stiff, dry, cheap paintbrush or a pastry brush that is like just sort of stiff goat hair or something, and I'll use that to clean it out, clean out the powdery stuff, but then you have to really wash it out. If you can get one that is specifically for herbs, you're better off. This is the one, this is a Bosch coffee grinder. We ended up needing to dedicate it to coffee beans. So that's why I went out and was fortunate to find this nifty device, because even though sometimes we put like spicy blends together, with the herbs and all to make different kinds of things. Coffee's not usually one of them. And I'm just looking for anything that's not a true petal.
When I would make like my hypericum oil, after washing and letting them sun dry, I used the fresh plant rather than dry. And I'd often blend it with the oil in the blender first. It just sort of helped it help more of the medicine of the hypericum oil come out of the plant. It sped up the extraction process, and it was really pretty pretty nice. So this particular oil takes minimum 2 months, not 2 weeks. You want it 2 months in your sunny window. There's a whirlwind of pink rose dust. Not sure if you can see in there. Get enough light in the cup. Powdered rose petals. Once I tried ordering some pre-powdered rose petals. Because it is something people ate as a supplement. And it was interesting. I decided I wouldn't use it for making oils. Even though I don't think there was anything wrong with it. It was basically pure organic rose petals all ground up. But I just like the idea of knowing more about what was in my oil from having more participation in it, if that makes sense. I thought also you might want to do a, if people found cooking thyme, like thyme, the herb thyme in your kitchen cupboards or out in your garden. Some people actually grow their cooking herbs out where they can just pick a few. We could try making a bit of a easy to do thyme syrup, which is nice for sore throat season. It's basically just thyme and honey. You can always go beyond that and add a few other things like lemon when you serve it. Thank you. going to have a nice coating of pink dust in the kitchen. This is getting very thick. I still have a lot more rows of petals to go. Not a whole lot. Oops, a leaf, those green leafy things. Getting better at powdering. You want to make sure the herbs are fully saturated. It smells very strong of good olive oil. It's not taking on the roses yet. Basically, turn this around. This is just rose petals, olive oil. By weight, it's formula calls for 136 grams of rose petals, 408 grams of almond oil is preferred so that it stays cool or it stays neutral and doesn't affect the temperament of the roses. But olive oil is acceptable, needs to sit for 2 months. This was half that much. It was I cut the ingredients in half. So this will sit along with all the rest of the things, shaking it periodically, making a fatiha, and inshallah in 2 months we'll have a nice oil. Same procedures we did yesterday with straining it through a muslin cloth and squeezing out all the oil. If you have a press designed for pressing oils, that's definitely easier on you. No, the process for making rose water is going to be different. I believe it's some kind of a distillation process. They call it an essence of rose. I really don't know the method. Wish I did, because rose water is wonderful. It can't be too hard. You find it in a lot of places. Again, if you can get nice, clean almond oil, the best almond oil would be where they've removed the skin first, because the skin adds heat and dryness. But what we're looking at in general with almond oil is that it is, hello, how's that? Oh, well, that's not too good either. My chin is just so lovely. The almond oil is considered temperament-wise to be balanced. So it's closer to warm and wet, balanced is, but it's basically what we would consider a neutral temperament, so that it's not influencing the temperament of the herbs that you're extracting into it. We have a method of deactivating honey. For the same reason, honey is hot, and when you preserve your herbs in a base, you want the base to be as neutral as possible, so that you're not changing the temperament, because you're influencing the temperament, and especially when you're looking at these cold herbs, because most of your preserving methods, whether it's honey or oil, are going to be warm. I think vinegar is cool and it's cold. I'll double check on that. That's the reason that what oil you use or menstruum that you're using is going to influence the temperament of your end product. Thoughts, questions, wishes for something more? Like I said, we could make a thyme extract and then make a syrup with that, so you have
thyme syrup for your sore throats and cold seasons, that sort of thing. Any thoughts? Requests?
Layla, do you have a question?
Hi, beloved. No, thanks very much. It was a question about rose water.
Okay.
Rahmasu is asking more about Tib. I'd be happy to do that. Let me kind of turn this around. Let's see. Don't need exposure to all my mess here in the kitchen, but I started out clean and organized. So Yunani Tib is it came from the Greco-Islamic medicine is what it's considered. And this is pretty old traditions. It includes Hippocrates and Galen. There's many old established herbal and medical treatments from ancient methods. Ayurvedic is actually the oldest organized medicine making and medical treating system, followed after that by Chinese traditional medicine, and then followed by Tib. Tib is, the Islamic doctors borrowed from the Greek quite a bit. They're all basically in the same region of the world. And what they took from the Greeks had to be in compliance with Islamic, like what halal, you know, what's going to be halal medicine. So from that, like Ibn Sina is credited with really bringing it out to the West. And I said this the other day where the old humoral meaning working with the humors of the body was part of our medicine in the West for centuries. And only in the last century did it start to be ignored as that's old fashioned and we don't do it that way. It's like studying to be an acupuncturist. It's a very, it's very phenomenal in a lot of ways. It's complex, and a good Hakim can even just take one thumb, place it on your wrist and tell you everything that's wrong with you and give you a treatment for it. I'm not there. I'm not very good with the pulse reading. That's part of it. Tib also incorporates the hijama, which is cupping. And we also use something called faucet. Faucet is actual bloodletting, similar to what they used to do in days gone by. Our first president apparently died from excess bloodletting. His physicians kept draining his blood, and they'd go, oh gosh, he's getting weaker. Maybe we better take some more blood, because it became associated with clearing bad spirits as well. It became kind of like a removing bad spirits as well as dirty blood. Normally, you're only using something like faucet when you have an excess blood ailment. It's not that often, but there was a brother in my class, he's a physician in Germany,
and he went to Uzbekistan this past year and to this whole symposium full of TIB practitioners, and he sent back some crazy pictures of having his leg treated in an old-fashioned, you know, just the blood shooting out his leg into a bucket kind of thing. It's like, it was different. But as a medical person, he then treats people with more modern equipment. But George Washington's physicians basically kept going, well, he keeps getting weaker, we better take more blood, instead of going, ah, he's getting weak, we need to stop taking blood. They basically bled him to death. You can look that up in old medical records. With the TIB medicine, we work with temperament. And we call it mizaj. That's the Arabic term for it, mizaj. And I can share a few concepts about that, because one, we're working with elements. There's elements, and that's earth, air, fire, and water. So there's four elements. There's temperaments that have to do with the temperature, which is hot, cold, and then there's wet and dry. So that's four. And then you combine them. You can have hot and wet, hot and dry, cold and dry, and cold and wet. You can look at the seasons and you can associate them with times of the year. So your spring is going to be warm and wet, and you think about spring, you think about babies, you think about buds on trees coming forth. It's a generative quality of growth. We look at summer as being hot and dry. And hot and dry is what we call safra. So the humors are called sauda, safra. Then wet is balgam, a balgami person. And then your cold and dry is sauda. So these are the names actually of the humors associated. Sauda, or a sadawi person who tends to have a cold and dry temperament. You've got balgami, which is cold and wet, and hot and wet is your damawi, which has to do with the blood. And then you've got, or dam, and then you've got the safra or safrawi, which is the hot and dry. So those are also the humors. You can look at humors if you want to do a visual on them, which is a very basic and not very sophisticated look. You take a vial of blood and you set it aside for a period of time. It will break up naturally into four parts. The four parts are the yellow bile, the phlegm or white bile, your blood, which is the nice deep red blood cells, and then the black blood or black bile. So it breaks up naturally into those four segments. When Sidi teaches us how to do the hijama, when he taught that, he would say to let the cups draw the blood. Now, this is a very small amount of blood. If you've had cupping or done cupping, you know it's not a lot of blood that comes out. You're not like bleeding somebody to death like the faucet potentially could do if you had silly doctors. But he would say to let the blood be drawn until the black blood comes out. And that black blood is the sauda, sadawi. Now, there are Western terms for these humors, which are melancholic, which is your cold and dry, phlegmatic, which is balgami or cold and wet, damawi, which is your I can't remember. It's like it's the English Western term is it starts with an S. I'm going to jump over to the choleric, which is your hot and dry, and maybe when I come back to the hot and wet, I can remember because I know it so well, and I'm for what you know how that is, and I can see it, and I can't get it out of my brain. It is anyway, it's a very easygoing quality characteristic. And then we have one more, and that's balanced or mutadil, and they lean towards the hot and wet, but they're more like warm and wet, not very wet and not very warm. They're just a very balanced temperament. Sanguine is the hot and wet sanguine. And it would eventually show up because it has to do with the blood. So there's seasons. The Balgami phlegmatic is winter. And you'll notice people who are phlegmatic end up with a lot of like respiratory stuff where they have cold, they have a lot of wetness showing up in their lungs. So they'll tend to, when the weather changes in that direction, they'll tend to have their ailments. The hot and dry, which is summer, is going to tend to have more they have more temper. They have a hotter temper. They have a short temper. They have a tendency to more to like headaches, arthritic pains, more inflammation. You're going to have your spring, which is the hot and wet. Their ailments are I'm not real clear on their particular things that they run into because they're just sort of like life is good kind of people. And I don't know, they're going to end up with the same as anybody else when their environment changes. For them, if it gets too damp, they're going to end up with damp ailments. They're going to get, if it gets too hot, they're going to dry up a bit and get, you know, like, but we all go through that. So I'm not really sure what to say about that one. In the autumn season, we're looking at the Sadawi or Sauda, the black bile, which is cold and dry. And this is the melancholic, and they tend to have more depression, anxiety, because your hot and dry person's going to have anxiety as well. And that comes from the dryness, dry, brittle nervous system. Which came first, whether it's the emotional state that dried out the nervous system or whether it was the dry nervous system that is causing the anxiety and palpitations. Cancer is something that is usually, we're looking at removing sauda from people who have cancer. It's the first thing you look at. It's not that each type can have, they all can have a cancer, but the most dominant and predominant type is the cold and dry. And then you go to the hot and dry. Those are the two main ones because of the dryness. But the cold and dry and the black bile is the hardest to heal. So that's one of the, that's kind of how you start looking at it. And then you start, what you're recognizing to find it as like it's, what's beautiful about this and these other traditions of healing is like it's totally holistic. Everything has a temperament. Everything has temperament. So that's why we're saying, like when you put your cold herb in, you want it in a neutral oil so that it stays cold so you can treat hot ailments. You are going to, you know, that's part of working with the elements of the environment. The planets, we're not into telling fortunes by the stars. That's not what this is. This is a recognition that all of Allah's creation is a whole existence, and that your quality affects my quality. This plant in my environment affects my quality. The change of the temperature outside and the changes of the season, that's going to affect my temperament. The full moon, why do you think there's what we call lunacy, more crazy crimes? The emergency rooms are full of more people suffering the mental illness during a full moon. It's cold and dry. And when it hits the cold and dry, somebody who's already melancholic and who suffers from like depressions and anxieties and has these disturbances, and the energetic of the extra cold and dry that's coming from a full moon, it is more than they can bear, and they often go off and have these breaks. So it's like the temperaments that are influencing us in the, you know, where's the moon today? Where's Mars right now? Is it really putting an influence, or is it gone away? And maybe it's Venus that's influencing. So it's more about the temperament. It's not about reading, oh, this sign means this and that. It's not astrology. It's astronomy, but in relationship to the wholeness of our existence. Where we live has an influence. Sheikh Atabek, my teacher, he was having some respiratory stuff, and he kept going on with this respiratory thing, and the students and the people in his clinic were going, Sheikh, why don't you treat yourself? He's going, there's no point. I have to move out of my house. It's a cold and damp house. There's a lot of dampness in the house, and until I change my environment, I can throw all kinds of herbs at myself, but it's not going to change anything because my environment is causing the difficulty. We use also minerals and gems. So like gold and silver and rubies and diamonds, you know, they're very powerful. So powerful that you have to be a senior herbalist to be allowed to use them. Because so we look at degrees, okay? We talk about, you might hear things about things, you might hear me mention first degree, second degree, third degree, fourth degree in heat or dryness or wetness or coldness. So first degree is very, very mild. You'll get some shifting of your temperament, but not much, and it definitely doesn't last very long. Second degree will cause a change in the temperament. So like if you're treating a cold ailment and you need to warm it up, and you use a mild second degree herb, it's going to adjust the humor at that time, but it's not going to hold it for long, and it will come, it'll stop influencing it relatively quickly, you know, a day or so. Third degree will change the temperament. And it needs another remedy to adjust it. So if you make a mistake and do not diagnose properly, and you give somebody a remedy that's third degree, you're going to change their temperament. And if it's the wrong direction, you need to know what to counter it and be able to give another remedy. And that's not too bad. I mean, you can modulate. fourth degree is so intense that it's a permanent change of the massage, and you need a master herbalist to fix it if you made a mistake. The gems and the minerals are that way. They are usually fourth degree. And if you give somebody, say, too much diamond, you could kill them straight out. Too much ruby, you could kill them straight out, etc. There was some story he told. I don't know who the sultan or pasha or who, some big king-like person accidentally swallowed a diamond, poop, because it's fourth degree cold and dry, and it took him out. It changed his massage too quickly and too radically, and in a way that is needed somebody to change that back very quickly. When you read some of Sidi's books, he does talk about seasons. He talks about a simple way of looking at it, because age is also another thing we're looking at. I have some of that mentioned in the dosage work handout. You know, what you're going to give a child dose-wise compared to an old person as opposed to a young adult, middle-aged, healthy, strong, big body, small body. These are all things we have to take into consideration. You don't give a little, tiny, thin, 80-year-old the same dose you're going to give a big, hearty, 40-year-old man, okay? Completely different. They're going to handle things differently. One's going to need a stronger dose. One needs much less. So you'll look at that kind of thing. CD talks about seasons. If an older man comes to you with a sexual weakness complaint and it's the middle of the summer and you ask him enough questions, you're going to find out that it's the season is too strong for him. And this happens every year around summertime. So you need to cool him off because the heat's too strong. You know, different things like that. We have hadith of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam eating dates and either melons or cucumbers, which I mentioned before, because they are going to balance each other out. So you can do things like that where you're balancing your foods that you're taking in. If you know something is super, super hot and you have a tendency to heat, you want to put something in cooling. Make sure you make your yogurt and cucumber salad, you know, if you're going to have a hot chili meal, something like that. That's a very generic, general sort of overview. Each of the organs has its own temperament. So we talk about the stomach needing heat. The liver is hot and wet. The heart is actually hot and dry while the lungs around it are cold and wet. So they're an interesting relationship. The brain is cold and wet. The nerves need to be kept cool. So there's this constant balancing, and it's a beautiful holistic method of working. And it takes, I mean, I started this a long time ago. The school had upsets, changes, etc. Classes got canceled. I was supposed to be done years ago, but here I am, still not graduated yet. And because of my move here, I probably won't graduate this year either. I'm going to beg mercy. I think that the Sheikh is more interested that we really grasp the knowledge are able to really truly know the work. He's more worried about that than whether we turn in a good paper or, you know, if I need more time, I'm sure I'm going to be given some support. You'll remember that Sadie talked about not eating milk with fish. Well, it depends on the fish. Here's a cute anecdotal piece. Your fish, you think it swims in water. It's probably cold and wet. It seems like a cold and wet thing, right? Freshwater fish, since fresh water is cool and wet, those fish, like trout, are cold and wet. However, the ocean is salty. It's hot and dry. You live on the ocean, you're going to be salty and dry. You take a voyage on a boat and over the salty ocean, you're going to have to clear that because you're going to become very dry, hot and dry. Just because it's water doesn't make it cold and wet. It's hot and dry. So sea fish from the ocean are also hot and dry. So you might notice if you're a hot and dry temperament that if you should, you know, have a nice seafood meal, you're feeling a little warmer than you anticipated, or you're thirstier and you didn't think you added any salt to anything, it could be because of what you've eaten. Milk in general is cooling, and, you know, the egg is lovely. The yolk, the yellow yolk is hot and dry, and the white part is cold and wet. So eating a complete egg in general is eating a balanced food. Questions?
Assalamu alaikum.
Oh, we got lots of stuff over here. Oh, thanks much. Didn't even see it. You sent it to my brain. Thyme syrup, as I get lots of sore throats. Okay. And is there one school or several to choose from? Yes and yes. And we've got 10 minutes. 9 now. Or is it 8 minutes? Okay. Let's see. Why don't I send you the recipe for thyme syrup? Ultimately, thyme syrup is a favorite syrup for treating coughs, colds, and chest complaints. So it's pretty effective. It's very delicious, and it you could actually even add some sparkling water and serve it as sparkling thyme tisane. Okay, if you got your pens and pencils. You're welcome. I do it all the time anyway. It's constantly having to be recleaned. 2 to 4 ounces of thyme leaf and flour. Fresh is best, but dry is okay. 1 quart of water and 1 cup of honey. So you probably already have this in your kitchen. Okay, so to make the syrup, you're going to combine your thyme and water in a pan over very low heat. Simmer lightly with the lid ajar to allow the steam to escape until the liquid is reduced by half. Giving you about 2 cups of strong thyme tea. Strain it and compost your spent herbs. Add the honey to the warm liquid. Let it cool down a little bit. You don't need it super hot. Just let it cool down till it's still, you know, warm but not hot, okay? Because that way you'll get more of the honey benefit. Most of you have heard my spiel on honey, and or you know it already yourselves, but the enzymes that are alive in the honey do get killed with high temperature. The minerals and nutrients are still usually fairly available, but you want to, it's best if it's just warm and you add it in, because that way it will melt and easily, but it's not going to kill your honey. So warm liquid and stir just until the honey is melted. Then you store it in a glass jar in the refrigerator where the honey will keep for 3 to 4 weeks. To use it, take 1/2 to 1 teaspoon every couple of hours until the cold or cough subsides. The funny thing about the honey not keeping things for a long time, I think because there's so much water in it that it's relevant. But if you were to do an infusion of herb into honey direct without the water, you're going to not have to worry about shelf life. It'll last forever. Good heavens, CD tells us about a 3,000-year-old or more. How old are the Egyptians? The Egyptian culture. The child that they found in a excavation in Egypt of a child mummified in a large jar of honey, and it was in perfect tact, completely nothing. It was a sleeping child embedded in honey, and that was a very long time. So if you're worried about spoilage for things in honey, I wouldn't be. That's one of those interesting aspects of the gift that we were blessed with the honey, inshallah. Let's see what else people are asking. Okay, funny, difficult to fill in. Okay, and there are many ways to diagnose in addition to blood analysis. Yes, please send thyme syrup recipe, inshallah, thank you. Okay, Rahima, could you make some of these notes and remind me what I'm supposed to remember? Yes. If you don't mind. Thanks, sweetie. Yes, okay. There's some general things. The best way is pulse reading, as far as learning how to identify yourself as hot and dry, cold and wet. There's some very basic things. I can give you some basic things. Everything has its exceptions. Nothing is 100%. And I'll share a couple of the places where it's the most difficult thing to go by. We have age to consider. Your babies that are infants to 8 years inclined to be hot and wet. As they get older, children, teenagers and young adults are hot and wet, but they're drier, so they're less so. If you're middle-aged, 33 to 35, basically where you've stopped growing, you start to become colder and in some cases leaner, but not in my case. Your adults that are age 60 through 70, 50 during the time of Avicenna are a bit more dry. There's more dryness. Some can be wet. But definitely colder and tend to cancer because immune system begins to attack your own body. Older body is no longer so solid. It's more porous. You can tell that by looking at old skin, how translucent it becomes. My mom used to take pictures of her skin, especially when it would be, God bless her, bruised from the warfarin and the blood thinners that she was on. Because it was so fascinating. It was fascinating. Anyway, that sounds morbid, I'm sure, but I have a little bit of an art background and I like textures and colors. So eye color is another way you can possibly diagnose, and the structure. General physical appearance, let me go with that. A fleshy body that may appear unexercised and has more meat on it is usually wet, number one. And often, if it's really fleshy and unexercised, it's very often cold and wet. And this is the balgami, or the phlegmatic. Outwardly bony and thin, lean towards dryness. So usually people who are very slender are going to be dry. Now, whether they're cold or hot is a different thing, but it's about dryness. I don't know if you can hear the adhan. Maghrib is in, alhamdulillah. The veins show hot. Those who are cold are the opposite. So somebody, this isn't about thin skin. This is just in general, like where you would, sometimes you see like maybe veins in somebody's, just through their skin in general. I'm cold. Even at my age, you're not really seeing my veins through my skin. The colder, the veins are not really showing, but the hot temperament, their veins are usually more visible. So veins are between these two, may be balanced or motadil. So you maybe see a few, but not very strongly. Hair color, generally, so white hair is cold. Black hair is hot. Red hair is relatively hot. Chestnut hair is considered an unbalanced cold. Chestnut mixed with red is well balanced. So blonde hair is going to be in the cold range. White hair, again, as we age, is usually because we're getting colder as we're aging. Gender, men are hot and dry, strong bones and muscular. Female are considered wet and cold. Now, a female can have a hot and dry temperament, but when you're looking at treatments and stuff, it gets a lot of layers you have to sort through. When you're considering what you're providing for somebody, what might else be going on when you're looking at treatment. Eye color, again, your blue eyes are going to be considered cold. Dark eyes are hot. Hazel, your hazel green or gray eyes are going to be more balanced. There's a general rule of dark is hot, cold is light, red is balanced when it comes to hair coloring. Now, the problem with skin coloring, also feature-wise, usually cold are narrow, thinner features, where broader, fuller features are usually also considered warmer. Skin color can be a means of detecting temperament. However, it's very tricky and has to do with in someone's group, are they lighter or are they darker within your own group? So maybe you have a brother and sister in your family that have, one has a much darker skin tone. Like my sister is really white skinned and a deeper blue eye and blondish hair. I have dark hair and I tend to tan real easily in the sun. I have a little more melanin in my skin, even though I'm pretty dang pale most of the time, but it's not, I don't have that whiteness. So I could say that she's probably cooler than I am. Although I'm on the cold and wet side myself. Or racially, it's really hard because within the group, you know, you might consider people from either the Middle East or from Africa who have naturally darker skin than somebody from Scandinavia, where they're very pale, blonde, and blue-eyed, white-skinned, but that's not always the truth. You have to, again, look at, like, their group structure. Are they lighter than the rest of the crew? Are they darker? You know, so that's another way. Looking at your pulse, you've got to tell wet and difference between a wet and a dry person. Usually the vein feels very full and flexible. That's going to be wetter. If it's hard to find, very thin, you're going to be looking at more of a dry. Other things that you can consider is how do you feel? Do you tend to be dry? Do you tend to be affected by cold, wet weather? Do you have more affected, where as soon as it gets cold and wet, like I said, you end up with a lung condition. Is your skin flaky and dry? Is your skin always needing moisturizing? That's probably a sign that you're probably on the dry side. And that's not to say because you've had a hot, dry wind come through that has sucked the moisture out of everything around you, that you're necessarily a dry temperament. Your environment has influenced the dryness in your skin. But I'm just talking constitutionally. Are you thirsty all the time? And all of these things are tricky because they could also mean that there's some kind of condition going on that says you're thirsty and you want to drink all the time. So those are a few ways to get a sense of it. The other side of it is, it's always really just feel within yourself. And just start looking at people. Be observant. Do you have, and sometimes I tell you, it's really, really hard. It's really hard to tell because until you've taken their pulse and really done an analysis, visuals can be very misleading. And like Zainab was saying, that even with our little tab, our little worksheet to try to figure that out, was that in year one or two? I can't remember. It was not easy. It's hard because you can tally up basic things and you can go, well, I'm kind of between both of these. I got almost the same, So it takes a lot of practice and study, inshallah. But maybe that helps a little bit. I think we are way past our time, which means we've been having too much fun. And I hope that everybody's had a pretty good time these few mornings. And I've definitely enjoyed being with you. I miss you in person. And my hugs to everybody. And you have my email. I might not jump back at you immediately, but I'll do my best to get back to you. I don't have everything set up in classroom yet. After teaching, then I'll have more ideas of what I'm going to put up for you. But you'll find a few answers to your questions. It's a good place to post things. You can talk with each other about things. We'll see you in July, alhamdulillah. Thank you. Thank you for your interest, your engagement in the class, and you've been fabulous. I think this is one of our best classes ever, even though we're not together. So, alhamdulillah. Assalamu alaikum.
Wow.
Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
I was thinking maybe it's a relief in a way that you haven't had to bring a whole suitcase.
Carload.
Yeah. You can just do it in the comfort of your home.